Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. It's free land education, guys. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro, along with my co-host Teresa Martin, and Shada and Molly and Rodney, our doggies and our station manager. So welcome on board here. Buying or selling homes, land or farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, on Highway 52, exit 136 across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share offices with Freedom Designs and Marketing for all of your graphic needs. Our company website is www.mylandpro.com, where you can see our listings, but also direct link to the Winston-Salem Regional Association of Realtors listings. So use it, and these are active listings only. Just a program note, Dr. Barbie Ask the Doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. just after this show. So make sure you make that note and don't miss Dr. Barbie. It's good stuff. Our guest today is Russell Riggs. Welcome, Russell.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. Welcome back. We had a show last year, and hopefully we can do this annually. Russell is in Washington, D.C., up there in the swamp with the government. He is our government affairs liaison for the National Association of Realtors. He's on the resort committee and the senior regulator representative for the National Association of Realtors for over 15 years. Russell's been engaged in Congress and federal regulation agencies such as EPA and FEMA on issues impacting resort real estate community, as well as issues related to property rights, environmental, natural resources, energy, land use, and insurance. Prior to his position at NAR, Russell held position in the Department of Energy, Council of State Governments, the National Government Association, and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. Russell has a bachelor's degree in political science from Virginia Commonwealth University, a master's in public policy from Tufts, what a great school both of those are, and a master's in public administration from NYU, New York City. Used to live a couple blocks from there years ago. Russell resides in Falls Church, Virginia, and has two beautiful children. So welcome again, Russell.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Yeah. And we got to see you Tucson last month and made your presentation. That's what we're going to use as our format today, bring up on these issues. Just for a second, I want to talk about the Realtors Political Action Committee, RPAC. It's currently the largest trade association, PAC, in the country. RPAC precedes the Realtors Washington Committee, which was established in 1943 to assist the federal government in providing housing for members and armed forces and other activities to support the war effort. In 1969, NAR Association formed the Real Estate Political Action Group and Committee, which the acronym is RPAC, and I encourage any realtor out there to make sure that you make your annual donation and help. This is all volunteer contributions from the Association of Members to pool the funds to make contributions to candidates for running for public office at the local level, state level, and the federal level. RPAC's name was changed to Realtors Political Action Group in 1974. RPAC remains the nation's largest PAC in direct contributions to candidates with distributions of over $4.3 million to federal candidates, national political committees, and, of course, through the election cycle. So that's what probably helps pay your salary, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you for all our members who so generously contribute to RPAC, and their dues money helps realtors in the real estate sector have a voice in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. And those are some old statistics. So we probably raised a little bit more money than that. And we're, 1.4 million realtors in the country now? Something like that?
About 1.3 million.
1.2.
The largest trade association in the country.
Wow. So you made a beautiful presentation at our conference out in Albuquerque, and you start off with greetings from the swamp, a.k.a. the healthy wetlands. So let's get into some of these issues, if you will, and give us some updates. course, government advocacy is important to member benefits. RLI has accessed DNA lobbyist research, legislative and regulatory analysts. RPAC, again, we talked about largest and direct indirect contributions. And, of course, RLI, the Realtors Land Institute, which I'm a proud member of and one of our instructors for the Land 101 class, one of our base classes, is the voice for land issues in D.C. So you be the voice and tell us what's going on. Where you want to start?
Well, gosh, I mean, you know, I put that slide in there in terms of the swamp. You know, a lot of people call it the swamp and got to be drained and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the fact is, it's where are the country's laws are made, and it's where our representative form of democracy is centered. And as someone once said, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the rest.
Yeah.
So that's what we got, and we try to make the best of it. And as a person who has been representing realtors in the real estate industry for now over 20 years, you know, I think realtors have a role to play in so many different issues and things that are moving through Congress and the regulatory agencies, and you know, they are really the lifeblood of any community that you go into. And I'm sure you know this in North Carolina. Realtors are, you know, when it comes to any kind of a natural disaster or helping out with the food bank or serving in the homeless shelter, realtors are always the first ones in line. They are really the heart and soul of the community.
Build a lot of houses, too.
They build, yes, they do. And so the other thing, too, is the fact that, you know, our grassroots is the strength of this organization. And so, you know, it's one thing for a guy like me, just a staff guy, a Washington, D.C. guy, to go into an office of a congressperson and make a pitch about an issue. It's a completely different situation when a realtor comes in to the district office and makes that same pitch.
How is that, Russell? How's that different?
Well, because it's coming from the heart.
Right. There's a passion there that we all share.
It's authentic, and you are living it every day.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely
on the front lines of a lot of these issues. And so when you go into an office as a realtor or a real estate professional, you go into the office and you say, this is important to me because I'm hearing it from my from consumers. I'm hearing it from my home buyers and homeowners. It makes a big, big difference. And so that is really the heart and soul of the National Association of Realtors and the Realtors Land Institute, for that matter.
Yeah. And I know we have Legislative Week every year in May coming up, and that's where a bunch of us, I don't know what the number is, you could probably tell us that,
well, right. You know, we have
come into Washington.
Our meetings, our meetings are coming up in May, and we have about, I'd say, 10,000 members from across the country come and be kind of take over Capitol Hill for a day.
Yeah, been there.
It's a pretty exciting time because we really just kind of like storm the hill. And we have three or four of our talking points that we go up there, and we meet with Congress people, senators, representatives, congressional staff, and we really, you know, make the point that there are issues that we care about, and this is what we're willing to do to make these issues reality, to make these legislation reality, or stop the regulation that might be hurting the real estate markets or property values, or maybe harming property rights. Very important to us to get that point across and to make sure that the folks up on the Hill know where we stand on issues of national importance, issues of state importance, and even issues of local importance.
Right. And we're very pretty effective, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I like to think we are. I may be a biased, I have a biased perspective. only because I work for NAR, but, you know, I think we've been pretty darn effective at getting our point across over the years.
Yeah. And that's some of the things we're going to talk about in the show today. One of the things that came up is, of course, the water rights. What's the update on that? What's going on with that? Maybe give a little history.
So this is called, this is called the Waters of the U.S., otherwise known as WOTUS. And you might go, what the heck is that all about? Well, you know what? It's really about who is responsible for protecting all of our waters. Is it the federal government? Are they responsible for protecting every little stream? Or do states and locals also have responsibility for protecting the waters that are in their state or within their locality? We like to think that there's a difference. The federal government isn't supposed to protect every single little pond and little stream and little creek in the country. They protect the big waters, you know, the really big ones. We make sure that, and believe me, it's important that they protect these waters because we use these waters, we get our drinking water from them. So we want to make sure that the federal government is protecting the right waters. Now, we don't want them protecting everything because when you have the federal government involved in all these, protecting all these waters, there are legitimate reasons why you have to have permitting and regulations and those kinds of things. But at the same time, we don't want to go overboard. We don't want to have regulatory overreach, which happens when you have the federal government involved. So this whole issue, waters of the U.S., is which waters are supposed to be protected by the federal government and which waters protected by state and local government. It has been our contention, the National Association of Realtors and many other regulated stakeholders, that the federal government recently has been overreaching. They want to regulate every single waters of the U.S., everything from the Mississippi River down to the tiniest little creek in somebody's backyard.
When did that start, Russell?
What's that?
When did that start? When did they start?
They started doing that. It was originally passed. A regulation was originally passed under the Obama administration in 2015.
Okay.
Now, that was never fully implemented because there are a lot of court cases that slowed it down and stopped it. So now the Trump administration gets in and obviously wants to change that, wants to reverse that trend of having the federal government regulate everything. So they have now introduced a new proposed regulation, which from our perspective is a much more reasonable, draws a much more reasonable line between what the federal government regulates and what the states and locals regulate. And so the comment deadline for that proposed regulation was actually Monday, April 15th, tax day.
Cool.
I don't want to read too much into that.
I understand.
So we commented in support of this regulation because we think it's much better in terms of making sure there is a bright line between what the federal government can regulate and what state and locals can regulate in terms of water. Now, we think it is protective of water quality. You got to have good water quality. Can't get around that. You got to. You got to have clean water, and that clean water has got to be protected. We're not saying that at all. We're not saying this doesn't do that, because it does. But it also reduces regulation on people who want to use that water. And it also makes sure there's a very bright line between what the states regulate and what the federal government can regulate. So for those reasons, we supported this regulation. And we're hoping that a lot of people support it as well. We are expecting that the EPA will take a look at all of these comments. They've probably got 300,000 comments, on this controversial regulation. And we are hoping that the EPA will see it our way and review the comments and then move forward with a good regulation that is both protective of our clean water, but also allows economic development and allows people to do what they want to do with their property.
Perfect.
While also being making sure that the states and locals have a strong role in protecting their waters, too.
We're talking to Russell Riggs. This is Let's Talk Land. So, Russell, we're talking about the water rights of the U.S. You know, there's navigable waters, and that's usually handled by the EPA and the Corps of Engineers. And then there's more water under the CWA. What's CWA?
The Clean Water Act.
Clean Water Act. Cool. And then, you know, there were a lot of rules that were finalized, but they were never implemented. So that's what we're lobbying right now, is to streamline that. Is that where we're going?
Yeah, we think that this proposed rule definitely streamlines the whole process.
Because, you know, they were wanting to, like the farmer that's got a wet, what we call a wet water stream, you know, it's dry until it rains, and of course that's where the water runs, the lowest part of the elevation there. And, I mean, they were getting down to wanting to regulate every farm and every piece of land in this country and the water that was there, you know, perennial water. I mean, yeah, that was like crazy. So, too much stuff.
Well, that's right, and that's why it's federal regulatory overreach. You know, there are some waters that should be regulated by the federal government, and we agree with that and think there's a legitimate reason for them to regulate.
Right.
Some waters, because we've got to make sure the water is clean.
So what's the next? What's the next step in this? We've made that presentation on the 15th. What's next? Where does that go?
Right. So the it's a proposed regulation.
Okay.
The comment period ended on Monday, April 15th. So now the EPA and the Corps of Engineers will review all of the comments that were sent in by people from all across the country, and will then address those comments and also move forward with a final regulation.
What kind of time are you talking about?
So they got, EPA received 300,000 comments.
Right.
So I am hoping, I am not holding my breath, but I am indeed hoping that they will get work through those comments and make appropriate changes where necessary to the proposed regulation, and then come out with a final regulation, you know, maybe later in 2019, might stretch to 2020.
Okay. Let's move on to National Flood Insurance Program. Now, that's supposed to expire May of 2019, so that's coming up. And is that during the legislative week up there?
No, it's going to happen at the end of May.
Okay. But I'm sure it'll be talked about.
Yeah, it's a huge issue for realtors and really for anyone who lives anywhere near a water body, like a river or the ocean. You have both of those in North Carolina, streams. So, you know, the National Flood Insurance Program is a critical program to help people get flood insurance. As you know, your homeowner's insurance does not cover flood. You have to get a separate flood insurance policy. If you think that your house or your property is at risk of flooding. Now, if you are in a high-risk flood zone, sometimes called the 100-year flood zone, if you are in that flood zone and you get a loan from a bank, you are required to purchase flood insurance. You don't have a choice. You have to get insurance.
It's expensive, too. Or can be.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be expensive. It depends. There's a lot of factors that go into how much your flood insurance is going to be. Now, the real question is it more expensive than getting flooded? Wouldn't you rather have flood insurance, maybe a little pricey, And if you get flooded, you have flood insurance.
Teresa, you don't have to worry about that.
No. Unless we have Noah Ark, because I live on the top of a mountain.
Well, then you're good to go. You probably don't need flood insurance.
Yeah.
And that's the real challenge. The real challenge is, let's say that you live just outside of the 100-year floodplain. So there's a line, you know, that says either you're in the 100-year high-risk flood zone or you're out. But you're right next to it. And that's what happened in, for example, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Right.
All those people that got flooded last year weren't in the flood zone. So they thought to themselves before the flood happened, well, I'm good. I'm not in the flood zone. I'm not in the high-risk flood zone, so that means I don't need flood insurance. They got flooded.
Yeah, Missouri.
Same thing happened in Houston.
Yeah, Missouri River recently, the Mississippi.
Yes.
And it's still going on now. These areas that haven't flooded in 500 years, these poor Iowa, Indiana, I mean.
That's exactly right. So there are more floods that are occurring, and these floods are affecting more homes not in the high-risk flood zone. Now, if you're on top of a mountain, like me, I live on top of the hill, you know what? I don't have flood insurance.
Right.
Fairly certain I'm not going to get flooded. But if you're closer down to where there might be a high-risk flood zone, then you probably need it. Now, the National Flood Insurance Program has a lot of problems. It is $24 billion in debt.
Wow.
Flood insurance can be expensive. And that's a challenge. It needs to be reauthorized periodically. It's going to expire coming up in May of 2019, just in a few weeks.
Right.
If the flood insurance program is not reauthorized, it goes away. And then you can't get new flood insurance policies. Your current policy is honored, but you can't buy any new ones.
Right.
And that's a real problem for the real estate industry who are trying to sell homes.
Absolutely.
Some of those homes are going to be in a high-risk flood zone. And if you can't get flood insurance, the deal's not going to go through. So it's really important that we, at the bare minimum, reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program.
How often does that come up? Is that an annual thing or 5 years? No,
it comes up, you know, they can reauthorize it for as long as 5 years.
Okay.
Congress. Can reauthorize it for 5 years, or what they've been doing for the past decade, it's just been reauthorizing it for 6, 7, 8 months at a time.
Really?
And that's a problem. It causes uncertainty in the markets because no one can be sure that the NFIP is going to be in existence. So that causes a host of problems on its own.
So does that?
But at the fair minimum, we have to reauthorize it.
Right. So is that reimbursing the insurers, or is that a direct payment from the federal government?
Yeah. No, it reimburses the insurers. That's exactly right. When you purchase flood insurance, you're purchasing it from a FEMA approved flood insurance. Or insurance company.
Right.
And so when you need to, if something happens to your home and you need to call in that a flood insurance claim, you do it to an insurance company, and then they get reimbursed by FEMA.
Is that like 100% reimbursement, or is there a formula there?
No, you can only buy for your house. You can only buy it up to $250,000.
I got you.
And that's one area that really needs to be improved.
Because the cost of real estate's more, values are up.
Cost of real estate's gone up.
Yeah.
If you're on the coast, if you're in the Outer Banks in North Carolina, and you have a house on the coast, how far do you think $250,000 is going to get?
Well, if I had one there, it'd probably cover it all, maybe my neighbors. But
well, I tell you, it's tough to find a house that's $250,000 in the Outer Banks.
I understand.
Usually you're talking about $1 million.
Yeah.
or less, or more. I mean, or more, maybe even more. So let's say it's 800. You've got to make up between two, and just say your house is completely destroyed. You got to figure out how to jump that gap between 250 and 800. So it's a challenge. It's tough, but that's one of the things that we need to reform in the program is increasing that that cap.
So what's your gut feeling on that? Which way is it going to go?
Oh, my gut feeling is that it's going to be reauthorized. It's not going to be reformed.
Okay.
Even though we've been pushing. And another area that would be fantastic if we were to try to reform it is to try to get private flood insurance companies into some of these markets. Private flood insurance can do a much better job in some areas and in some aspects of flood insurance in getting affordable and available flood insurance.
Let me ask you a question. On all these issues we're talking about, I mean, not only for our industry, but throughout, how effective is the public? I mean, is it to call, to mail? What's the most effective way that gets the people's attention in Washington?
Oh, it's amazing. People in Washington, Congress, pays attention to public attention. If a particular issue or a piece of legislation is getting a lot of calls, they keep a running tally of all the calls. They keep a running tally of all the emails, the texts, the letter, hard copy, and they still get hard copy letters. They keep all that. And they keep a running tally. And they get an idea of what is grabbing people's attention and what isn't. And if they see one particular issue is getting a lot of attention, man, they will get right on that.
But with split politics, I mean, does it really matter? Because they're just going to fight, you know.
Well, that's a whole different ball of wax. You're talking about politics.
I understand. Sorry about that. This is not supposed to be a political show, Teresa.
Okay.
Don't be bringing up stuff like that.
All right.
All right. Let's move on.
I will say one thing about politics. I will say one thing about that. I have said about that. The National Association of Realtors does not pay attention to party. All right? We support people who support realtor and real estate issues, and that crosses party lines. That's why we have our own party.
Right.
It's called the Realtor Party. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, Independent. It doesn't matter to us. What matters is, do you support the issues that we care about?
Right.
And if you do, we will support you.
Because we support the issues that our people care about. Because they're our bread and butter.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, you talked about RPAC earlier. RPAC gives about 60-40. 60 to who's ever in power and 40 to who isn't. Our boss likes to say that we make our friends before we need them. The House is going to flip. Senate's going to flip. There's going to be somebody new in the White House. Doesn't matter. We make our friends before we need them.
That's interesting.
Cross party lines. We are bipartisan in our approach to policy.
I've never heard that before. Are other organizations have the same thing, or are we kind of unique in that?
No. No, they don't.
Oh. Well, that makes us special.
We are unique. We are unique.
I didn't know that.
You've got to remember, we have 1.3 million members. They're not all Democrats. They're not all Republicans. They have all different kinds of opinions, and believe me, I hear them every day.
I bet you do.
Which is fantastic.
You know, that's just one other reason to use a realtor is because they are helping to fund our lobbyists who are looking out for us.
That's right. We not only do we pay attention to what our realtors care about, we are also on the side of the homeowner, We are on the side of the property owner. And the things that we support are going to help them. Not only realtors, but they will help property owners and homeowners.
Yeah, we can't support them if we don't have business. So it's greatly appreciated by all realtors whenever we have people who come to us for listings or to buy. Either way, you know, whatever we can do to help, realtors are so unique and are special.
Yeah, exactly. So what do those homeowners care about? They care about property rights, right, making sure that they can do what they want to do on their property. They want to make sure that their mortgage rate is low. And that gets into the whole, all the government-sponsored Fannie and Freddie, the government-sponsored enterprises, right, to help make sure those mortgage rates are kept low.
Yeah.
We're talking to Russell Riggs, and this is Let's Talk Land. So, Russell, we're talking about legislative issues. Let's talk about the Endangered Species Act reform. You know, Congress wants to modernize it. There's obviously better science today, better economics. There's relaxations on critical habitat restrictions, incentive property owners, and giving states more authority. So where are we with that Endangered Species Act? And when did it start?
Right. So, you know, the thing about the Endangered Species Act is that it's supposed to do two things. Protect endangered species and allow economic development. The problem with the Endangered Species Act, it doesn't do either one very well. It doesn't protect species, that's for sure.
Right.
The species listed on there, how many have come up? Not very many. And then, when it's listed, there's a list of things that property owners are not allowed to do on land that may be supported in endangered species many years ago. One has never been seen on there. Or the other problem is it could conceivably, on land that could conceivably support endangered species, a particular bird or creature or critter, but that particular bird or critter has never actually lived on that property.
Right.
But it could. So that means you can't do anything with it. Now that's a problem. Give property owners the right incentive to do the right thing. Allow them to do what they can do best on their land to protect that critter. And I guarantee you, if you do the right incentives, give them carrots, not sticks, or give them carrots, don't beat them with a stick.
Right.
They will do the right thing. They will protect the property. They will protect the land. And they will also maximize the useful benefits of the land. But right now, there are no incentives. It's all stick. And so people don't care. They don't want to do the right thing.
Right. So where are we with this? Is this some new reforms coming that's going to address that?
Or? Well, I mean, there's a lot of attention being paid to this issue by particularly Senator John Barrasso from the state of Wyoming. He is the chair of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee and is very interested in moving forward legislation that would dramatically reform how the Endangered Species Act is implemented and administered.
How long has this act been around?
The Endangered Species Act itself has been around since 1974.
Okay.
It's been around a long time. So it needs to be reformed. It needs to be updated and modernized. And he wants to do that. Probably the biggest reform that he wants to do, he wants to give states more authority in protecting species within a state. Because they know how to do it the best.
Of course. There's a lot of things the states know how to do the best than the federal government does.
Now, the challenge is making sure that states have enough resources to do it. Right. They have the authority, but not every state has the resources to do it correctly. And so that's going to be the real challenge, is making sure that the federal government, Congress, appropriates enough money to give the state to implement the Endangered Species Act correctly. That's probably going to be the biggest fight. Because you can authorize anything, but you know who holds the key? Who holds the real power?
Who?
The appropriators. The ones who give out the money. So you can have all the authority in the world for different programs and policies and things like that. If you don't have the money, you're not going to be doing a darn thing.
So what's the status of that, and what are you seeing in the future here?
Well, he's introduced the bill.
Recently?
Recently. And he's going to be holding some hearings on it and moving it forward. We're going to be supporting him because we think it's a good bill.
Sure.
And we're hoping that other senators and are also of like mind with the Senator Barrasso, and will move forward and support the bill and pass the bill, and then it goes to the House. And the House has got to pass the bill, and the President's got to sign it.
Russell, so, let me ask you a question. Where can the public go and, like, find his proposed bill and all these other issues? I know there's government websites.
Well, I mean, so it depends. I mean, for this, you can go to the website of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee.
So is there like a menu on one website where you can disseminate information on all these issues we're talking about today and other issues, or each one has their own little...
Yeah, you know, for NFIP, you got to go to FEMA and other places. You know, it's not all one place.
Right.
Unfortunately, but, you know, these are very disparate issues with you know, it's all different kinds of stuff.
Right.
Now, NAR has got a great website that we have tons of stuff on there.
Yeah, we do. That's probably one of the better resources, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time and money on that. So you can go to the National Association of Realtors.com, NAR.com, and you can find these issues on there, or most of them, I'm sure. Anything else about the Endangered Species Act?
Species.
It's not species. Well, we just did a marijuana show, so.
Maybe you're feeling a little spacey.
Yeah, you got it. What's going on?
We'll talk about, you know, about the, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Anything else we want to talk about that, and we'll move on to drones.
No, we can move on.
Okay, let's drone it. Just did, getting ready to do an auction in Virginia. On May the 4th in Lambsburg, for Interstate 77, right at the North Carolina border. Going to do a little over 400 acres and 9 different tracks and 4 different locations. So just putting the word out there. But we just droned, which we use all the time, the property.
Right.
One of them, it's like a quarter of a mile on a walking trail to even get to the property. And, of course, you've got the interstate bordering one side, so you can't park your car and come in that way. And thank God for drones, because now we can feature the property, you know, a mile away, or half a mile away, as it was. And so what's going on with that?
You know, and, you know, I have to say that I foresaw this cottage industry growing of people who know how to operate drones. And you can take really beautiful pictures of property with a drone.
Absolutely.
And I said, you know what? If this regulation ever goes through that allows drones to be used for commercial purposes, there will be a cottage industry formed that does just that. And sure enough, I think it's happening as we speak.
And this is something new, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I know it's been around for a little while, but now we're getting, and FAA is the one that rules this, right? They're the lead on that.
Right. Yes, Federal Aviation Administration is the one that regulates the use of drones. And so now they're allowed for commercial purposes. You can, you know, as a realtor, you can use them to take pictures of a property, movies, are using drones to make movies. Utilities are using drones to inspect power lines and smokestacks and coal-fired power plants. Buildings are using drones, like if you have a big skyscraper.
Right.
Not even a skyscraper. They're using drones to inspect the outer walls and bricks and making sure they're, you know, everything is good on the outside of the building. So there are all kinds of ways. The only thing right now is the fact that you have to keep that drone within your sight. You have to be able to see it. And you can't do it over crowds.
Like at the ball game this weekend. Did you see?
Now, there are future regulations that will allow beyond line of sight operation of a drone, which means, particularly for realtors, and particularly ones who sell land, you can operate that drone 2 miles away.
Right.
It hasn't happened yet. I'd say that's probably about 5 years off.
Why is that taking so long?
Well, you know, we want to make the FAA wants to make sure that it's done correctly. Because there are safety considerations that you have to think about. And we want to make sure that safety is number one. You don't want one of these drones flying into a helicopter or flying into an airplane.
Right.
And they've come close. Because there have been some really dumb people out there operating drones not safely. And so I think that's probably the number one issue for the FAA. We have to make sure that the integrity of our airspace is protected zealously. And so that's why you see them proceeding pretty cautiously with the beyond line of sight proposed regulation.
So that's the biggest thing in the bill? Or proposed bill?
Well, proposed regulation.
Yeah, regulation.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the Farm Bill reauthorization. We just had an update on that here a couple months ago. And I think we had some good things happening, didn't we?
Yeah. So it was reauthorized in 2018. It's authorized about every 5 years or so. And I think there are some good things in there.
Okay, tell us.
A lot of people. I think the farmers were very happy with it. And I think it really helped in terms of conservation. It really provided a lot of good incentives for farmers to conserve their land and put it into programs that will help preserve it as an agricultural amenity, as an agricultural. It has value as agricultural. Now, one of the things that I was disappointed about as the Farm Bill was being reauthorized, there were some terrible wildfires occurring. Not just in California, but in a lot of different places, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, big wildfires. And so I would have loved to have seen more resources gone into helping fight those fires.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, that didn't happen. So we're going to have to take another approach to make sure that these wildfires get the resources they need to fight them and put them out. Because that's a real problem.
Well, also the conservation of it, too. You know, for years and years, you know, I mean, we've got several mountains right around here, and the local one's Pilot Mountain, which is about 3,800 acres, a state park. And, you know, every so often the old timers say, well, they'd burn the mountain. What do you mean they'd burn the mountain? Well, they're burning the underbrush, the fire, you know, the dead stuff and the kindling. And years ago, the federal government put a stop to a lot of that stuff, didn't they? And now when we have these fires, it's a disaster because it's got all this kindling that could have been taken care of like it's been taken care of for thousands of years.
Exactly. You got to have controlled burns. But more than controlled burns, you also have to provide property owners with the right incentives to remove a lot of the really big stuff.
Right.
Before the fires ever get started. Get rid of all that dead stuff that's been sitting there for decades and is dried out and just ready for a spark.
The P3 conservation is on your slide. What is that?
Public-private partnership. And again, it's really just incentivizes the public entities like the USDA to search out private land for conservation purposes. And I think that's a good approach.
I like that. Anything else on the Farm Bill?
No, I think we're good with that.
How about tax reform? There was a lot of stuff in the tax reform bill, 2007.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the tax reform, well, first of all, it protected 1031 like-kind exchanges. And if you're a realtor or a land realtor, you know about those and how important they were or they are.
Yep, just closed one 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So they were completely protected. You know, the other thing that the tax reform bill did is really kind of amazing. It hasn't gotten more press, but it really allows, if your business, and I know a lot of realtors have their business structured this way, if it's structured as a pass-through entity, you can deduct up to 20% of that.
We took advantage of that, by the way.
You did?
Yeah, we sure did.
Well, that's perfect. Right. So I think right now, you know, the IRS is still in the process of clarifying exactly who can take advantage of this tax deduction, how they can take advantage of it. But I do know that some people did this year in terms of their business taxes, and I think that's only going to grow as people really get more educated about exactly what this can do.
What is a pass-through entity? I don't understand.
Well, so theoretically, as a realtor, you have just set up a company, right? So you don't see, as a realtor, if you get paid a commission, that commission is paid to your company, not to you.
Right.
And that is a pass-through entity.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you need to set up your own company.
Right.
So instead of paying Teresa Martin, United Country Real Estate Land Pro, my company, would now pay your company, and then you can take advantage of that.
Okay.
Okay? So you definitely need to. We're encouraging all of our agents to do that.
Okay.
And it's not that hard to do, and it gives you a lot more creativity and saves you a lot of money.
Do you set it up like a sole proprietor?
It can be sole proprietor. It can be a partnership. It can be an S corporation, just whoever your tax accountant is. Let them advise you. Mine's set up as a corporation.
Okay.
So, but that's good stuff.
And that's the kind of situation where you're basically paying yourself a salary. The corporation is paying you a salary.
Okay.
So you get those benefits. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As if you were working for General Electric or, you know, corporation.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on the tax reform?
No, you know, I'm not a tax expert.
I'm not either.
I don't even claim to be. I don't even pretend to be. That's why we have some folks here in our office who are fantastic, who know every inch of the tax reform bill.
How many people in our office?
Here in Washington, D.C., in the whole building that we're currently are, we probably have about 200 people.
Really?
And not just government affairs, but we also have our research department.
Right.
And we also have our public affairs folks who are here.
We have offices outside of Washington?
Oh, yeah. Well, have our headquarters, which is in Chicago. And then every state has their own state association.
Right.
For example, the North Carolina Association of Realtors.
We do.
And then a lot of localities have their own board. For example, where I'm from, the Memphis Board of Realtors.
Right. Infrastructure.
Yes, sir. Well, the joke here going around Washington, D.C. is the fact that, you know, every other week seems to be infrastructure week, and then something happens and no one pays attention to it.
What's going on with that?
Well, you know, there's always some other little drama that happens that, you know, interferes with infrastructure.
Okay.
But the fact is, infrastructure is critical for real estate markets and property values. For every $1 billion invested in infrastructure, there's an estimated 13,000 jobs are created. So think about it. Today, what did you do? You got up, you switched on a light, you turned on your water, you got in your car and drove to your office. You probably talked on your on your iPhone, your mobile phone, used your computer. All that is based on infrastructure. Your power grid brought you electricity. Your water pipe brought you water. Your iPhone or your mobile phone is broadband, internet, and Wi-Fi. Obviously, your road, infrastructure. It's all infrastructure. The basic stuff of what makes up civilization and what allows us to do the things that we do. Without that, we're nowhere. We can't do anything. And it's crumbling. How are the potholes on your road today? I know in D.C. there's a lot of potholes.
Yeah, I hit a couple today.
Yeah, exactly.
And water pipes and sewer pipes that are 100 years old, or in some cases exactly. Older.
Yep.
Transportation.
So, you know it's critically important that we update and modernize all of our infrastructure systems.
And that's pretty bipartisan, right?
Extremely, completely bipartisan. Everyone wants to do it. You know the biggest challenge?
Yeah.
Come on, you know the biggest
money.
Challenge.
Money. It's got to be money.
How are we going to pay for this? This is not going to be cheap. You can't do it on the cheap. So it's going to be expensive.
Well, we just added to our national debt, you know, 22
trillion. Oh,
there you go. Let's go to 24 or 26 trillion or 30 trillion or 50 trillion. You know, it's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy.
So, listen, it's going to be expensive. But everybody uses it. Everybody uses water. Everybody uses electricity. Everybody uses the road. So we got to pay for it.
Right.
But there's got to catch up with other countries.
But some of the stuff that they're talking about is joint venturing with private enterprise.
Sure.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that's a good approach. At least it seems to be.
Well, if you pay for it because of it, the money just goes right back into the economy.
Well, that's exactly right. This is an investment. Sorry.
We've got our cheering audience. We've got other people coming in the station.
So,
yeah.
They agree.
Molly and Shada, they're protecting us.
This is the first time that they've actually said it.
Well, that's exactly right.
And what are we talking about?
It depends on the subject, Russell. And
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They love infrastructure.
You got their votes.
Now, the other way you can do it, and this is a pretty controversial way, to increase the gas tax, the federal gas tax.
Right.
The federal gas tax has not been increased since 1993.
Is that the same for every state? Is that the same amount for every state, or does that vary?
That's the same amount for every state, but every state has their own gas tax, too.
Sure, I understand.
On top of all the other stuff.
Right.
And that varies. The state taxes vary.
Right. The federal doesn't. The
federal tax is 18 cents per gallon.
18?
Now, 18 cents per gallon. Now, the you know, the problem is the fact that people have been driving less, and the more vehicles are more energy efficient, and the more, you know, electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles on the road, so the amount of gasoline people have been using has been going down, and that means less money into the highway trust fund, which is where the bulk of the money goes to spend on roads and mass transit. So the monies have been decreasing.
But it's still solvent, though, right? I mean, we do have money in the bank for that one, as opposed to a lot of programs we don't.
That's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough money.
But at least we have some, as opposed to some of these other programs that have none, like the flood insurance.
There's never enough money.
Exactly. So there's a real bipartisan opportunity here to do something that is going to be a critical investment in our future economy. Will Congress do it? For a while there's a lot of discussion about it. Oh, man, we've got a great ideas here. Recently, it's been, they seem to have lost the momentum. They lost their mojo to get something done on this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to cross the finish line. And they're going to miss a big, important opportunity.
But the public can help this along by communicating, get something done, right?
Well, that's the idea, trying to get something done. We'll see.
We're just a few minutes left, Russell, and this has been a great show. We just had a discussion on marijuana and cannabis. Is there anything going on? Just real quick, maybe spend a minute on that.
Yeah. Well, there is actually some legislation that would help banks, you know, address this question of they can't get involved in marijuana because it's still a Class 1 felony. They don't want to get in trouble. And so as a result, they don't, and this is like the big bank, they don't get involved at all in the marijuana cannabis industry, which, by the way, is a growing industry.
Oh, yeah, we just heard some numbers. It's like crazy.
It's a billion-dollar industry in some states, okay?
Yeah.
So there's money to be made here.
Infrastructure.
Yeah, the infrastructure of cannabis. So this legislation, let me get to the name of it, H.R. 1595, the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, will help banks support cannabis-related businesses, CRB. It'll help bring them into the federal banking system by making sure that if they follow the rules, banks will not get in trouble if they, for example, set up a checking and a savings account for a cannabis dispensary.
Right.
Business. Something like that. So, I mean, NAR is not taking a position on it. We're still looking into the whole issue. But it seems to me that kind of makes sense to where it's legal, because some states, I mean, obviously it's not legal within the country. Some states it is. Hey, let's let banks in states where it is now legal to grow and to have and use marijuana. Let's allow the banks to support those businesses that are thriving.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
Sure. Let's close this out. How do people get in touch with you, Russell?
Well, they can certainly shoot me an email if they want.
What's your
Riggs. It's RRIGGS.
Double R.
Double R.
IGG.
RRI. GGS.
Double G.
Double G. At realtors.org.
Phone number?
202-383-1259.
been a perfect guest today. Thank you for bringing us up to date on legislative issues at the national level. And thank you for all the work you do and all the people up there on the staff. You wouldn't believe how much we appreciate you. And for those realtors out there, please give to RPAC and help out. It's, I do it every year. I've done it since I've been a licensed realtor. And when I make more, I give more, and it's just the way it is. But it's a worthy cause. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we would appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. This is the source. Rodney, how do they get in touch with us?
Well, they can tune you in every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and also they can hear it worldwide on the Simple Radio app.
So if they go to the Simple Radio app and put in WKTE 1090, mm-hmm. They can download that. They can listen to it anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world.
Now, after we broadcast, this show is going to be broadcast on the 27th. Okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then we download that, and I do, on my master website, which is www.letstalkland.net, L-E-T-S, no apostrophe, talkland.net. Also download it on Podbeam, Spotify, Facebook, and other sources. My email is Lou, L-O-U, at mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Teresa, thank you, Rodney. And thank you to our little doggies that helped out today. And we'll see you next week. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you.